This is Law and Disorder.
Today on Law and Disorder, we take a summer respite and share with you some behind-the-scenes moments in a segment we're going to call the Disorderly Bloopers.
These are outtakes that our producer Jeff Brady saved of some of the sillier things that we did in the early years of our program.
Michael and I will also share some of our favorite courtroom jokes, off-the-record quips and exchanges between attorneys, clients, and judges.
Because when you're in the courtroom, very often there's a stenographer that takes down everything. And the stuff we're going to read you are things that were taken down that I'm sure embarrass everybody that opened their mouths that day.
Finally, we'll share some passages from Anne Fagan Ginger's book, The Relevant Lawyers, notably one on political attorney Charles Gary.
One of the great lawyers of the 20th century, and he gives his opinions on how you should conduct a political defense.
Stay with us.
I'm New York City attorney and author Michael Stephen Smith.
And I'm New York City attorney and activist Heidi Boghossian. We first began recording Law and Disorder in 2004, the same year the Republican National Convention and large protests were held in New York City. When we started, we had four hosts, Dahlia Hashad and Michael Ratner, along with Michael Smith and me, Heidi Boghossian. After a few years, Dahlia moved to California, leaving just three hosts. And in late spring 2016, we lost Michael Ratner to cancer. Now there are just two of us. It is our special pleasure now to share with you our first segment of the Disorderly Bloopers, behind-the-scenes audio outtakes from the first years that we were on the air. As part of this special summer episode, we thought these studio snippets might provide a few minutes of much-needed levity. Law and Disorder was created during the George W. Bush administration to cover some of the darkest days in the nation's history, and sometimes a dose of humor helped us get through the recording sessions. We think it's important to take a few minutes to laugh at ourselves and to look back at the hundreds of fun days that we here at Law and Disorder have had over the years. As we covered some of the most serious topics in the news, and amidst the enormous respect we had for all of our guests, the four of us enjoyed a special relationship, along with our long-standing producer, Jeff Brady. This is a relationship that comes from working closely together and respecting each other highly as colleagues and friends. Let's take a listen to our first segment of the Disorderly Bloopers.
Really? Boghossian, on the other hand.
Very common. No, it's common. It's like Smith in Armenia.
Boghossian used to be common until the massacre.
Oh, true. How true.
Boghossian. They lost a lot of Boghossians in the killing.
My father had a partner named Paul Boghossian.
Really?
They sold rugs together in Milwaukee.
Really?
He had a rug business, yeah.
It's called Magic
Paul
Carpet
Boghossian.
Rugs.
Yeah. And I worked for him one summer. My job was we had an office.
Clean
and
the
I had
carpets.
A phone book.
Okay. That's great.
Okay,
thank
great.
You.
Awesome.
And I have a book for you.
Oh!
Yeah, I'm sorry, it's got a little bit messy. How do you think that was that enough?
Oh, that's great. If you could just say, hi, this is Heidi Boghossian.
Oh, okay.
I'm here with...
Yes, Eileen Clancy. I'm on the street.
Otherwise
I'm on the street with Eileen Clancy.
Yeah, okay.
Hi, this is Heidi Boghossian. I'm reporting on the street with Eileen Clancy. Let me do it again.
Yeah. Really
I know.
Going back to 1215? Wait, going back to 1415? What's it? Magna Carta. It's 1415.
Is it?
It's 1415. No, maybe it's not. It's 1215. Yeah, it's 1215.
1215.
Yeah.
ACLU attorney Damiel Jakhal grew up in Israel.
Wait.
What's his
That's
name?
So cute. Jamil Dakwar. Jamil Dakwar.
Jamil Dakwar.
Yeah.
Why are we interviewing?
Because he's the lawyer.
I know we normally just interview friends.
I should hold up a bag of change and just shake it while
you know what? Oh my God.
So, okay, but.
What do we want to ask him in addition to. Mackler kind of laid it out.
But the problem is. Well, so we can't say, tell us briefly about the three issues that were certified. No.
Yeah, we can. We have to.
He's expecting to be asked those questions.
He does a better job.
Of course he can do. That's all he's going to want to talk about.
Everything? Let's just do billboard and everything. Yeah, Today on Law and Disorder is a series of nether disasters.
First,
wait. Everything that stinks in the world right here in 1 hour.
Well, we get to report on it. We're so depressed every week.
Passerbyers and volunteers. they want to shoot volunteers. Passersby?
Yeah.
Passerbyers? Oh, wait. But I shouldn't say
they
passersby.
Passerbyers is a good way to say it because they're buying it.
Right? I was talking to a reporter, and he told me that he had spoken with Taser International, and they had said that it was their hope that at the electronics show they would be able to set up a booth where they could have volunteers. People could walk up and be volunteered to be shot with a taser.
Daya, this is a shocking story.
It's giving me a real jolt.
You're going to have to cut out from there. That's hilarious.
Okay.
Now, to my mind... Sounds not too bad.
To my mind?
Yeah.
Wait.
12th Street's like this. Mm. Yeah, I guess that way.
Or in your underwear, with the packages you buy, with the this sucks. I'm just contributing to our outtakes at this point.
The government's going to be under your skin and in your underwear.
Oh, that's cute. That's really cute. Michael, say that.
The government's going to be under your skin and in your underwear.
Yeah, yeah. That's really extraordinary.
Want to end it there?
Perfect. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah, good stuff. And now I'm going to go fetch her. Maybe she's out there.
But fetch a bone for me, too, while you're...
Open your torture book and look at the last two pages.
Where are you going to put her? Put her over here.
So you can talk to her more directly.
Yeah. Michael, I want you to talk to her.
No, I will, but you must
put her there.
No, and we can all
Yeah, but
there.
Michael, you're taking the lead.
Yeah, you should. Do we have anything else we want to cover?
What else has happened?
So Michael just left her out there. Jen's going to send her in. What else do you want to do? There was a really good crack cocaine room.
Oh, 76. Right.
Yeah.
This is nice. It's good.
We can put on a really dynamite show. So far, it's great.
Yeah,
really
it's perfect.
What's left of the macadamia?
Sorry, I'm just feeling plenty left.
Bring more.
I'm sure I'm forgetting a lot of things. That's why I'm trying to, like... Oh, I could talk about Katrina. How about New Orleans?
Yeah, but also, are there any other victories related vis-a-vis drug policy in this country? Okay.
No, I mean, there probably are. I guess the medical marijuana thing is the one that's marching along. And I understand that there is a bill in New York now.
I don't know.
And that may or may not move. Mm. You know, New Jersey just instituted needle exchange.
I saw that.
After 13 years.
That was amazing. Well, that's something to say.
Let me ask a question about needle exchange.
The New York bill.
That's something I know.
And then let's talk about. You want to talk about Katrina?
I would like to.
Yeah, okay.
Talking about. Talking
about.
Do we have to be out of here at 2? Do we have to be out of here at 2?
Because
we have introductions to do. Okay. All right. All right. Let me ask a question. Okay.
Yeah, you too.
Bye-bye. It was really amazing, Michael. It's an amazing case, really.
Oh, sorry, Jeff.
Really? That case, you should write a book about that case.
Sorry, Jeff.
Heidi, let's get Heidi.
This book is great, Heidi.
Oh,
Heidi,
good
job. Can you sign it for me?
Thank you.
This book is unbelievable.
Thank you.
I didn't even know
that. Wait. Are we taping?
When did this come out?
We're working on
this.
It just came out.
No, we'll talk about it. Let's introduce it.
Yeah.
Let me just point out.
I just dumped crumbs.
I'm sorry, Jeff. I'm sorry.
I can't believe it.
That's why they say no food in here.
Our guest, Eileen.
I know.
Eileen.
Okay, let me just tell you.
Michael, you can take your earphones off now.
Can you buy this book?
Heidi's in the room with us.
You can have as many copies
as you want. So you just go to the Guild website?
Yeah.
Wow.
Beautiful. So maybe I'll put a link.
They did a nice job.
Send me the link, Heidi, so I can put it onto my Just Left.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That'll get you like a lot of... Okay, so let me... Should I start?
Look at intelligence.
Yeah.
All
right, hold on.
I especially like the things that are not even modern ways of fighting it, but are ancient, that I saw pictures from Italy during either Genoa 2001, the Archimedes Project. Archimedes defeated an invading army by using mirrors. Mm. So there are protesters on the ground with little handheld mirrors defeating ability
That's
of
fabulous.
The ground police, the helicopters, everybody to see them.
That's fabulous.
And it's ancient. And
yeah.
That I particularly like.
Yeah, yeah,
you
that's
need not fight technology with technology.
Right.
You can fight technology with a bicycle and
simplicity, yeah.
And a water well and a mirror.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, I was really comforted by that.
Yeah.
And the cleverness of the person who knew the Archimedes
right.
story is because I just loved every bit
that's
of it.
That's neat.
What? Wait, say that again?
I'm just going to say our guests joining
I've done
us.
This. I did the
yeah.
introduction. Or was that for later? Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, this is how does this show open? Let me do a quick opening. Okay. And then I'll just and then you'll go into.
Yes.
Okay.
Go ahead.
And what's his name?
you won't be able to hear him too well because he's still down in his token booth.
It says, how do you transfer from the entry to
ask him what he Do we still use tokens, Marty?
Stop. Will.
Visit us at lawanddisorder.org.
Hey, nice.
Good job, Doc.
Very good. Very good. 2 minutes, that's fine.
Yeah, okay. All right.
After 9/11, we have
Okay, wait.
Wait, Doc. You can't see what we're
doing. Put everyone.
Oh,
get a chocolate pretzel
pretzels.
And put it in a mouth. Chew away from the mic.
You don't need caviar, right?
Sorry.
Are we ready?
Yeah.
Is that salmon over there?
Okay. Okay, let's do the rundown.
That was the last question was the best.
Yeah, let's do the rundown.
I know, it gave me
you could hear the warmth in her voice. Okay.
Yeah,
today on Law and Disorder.
Whoa.
It's unbelievable, isn't it?
It is. For years.
Listeners, I want you to come in here and see what people are wearing.
Yeah. See what people are, but fortunately for you, you can hear the sound of them eating like pigs.
Well,
never mind what they're wearing.
You know, our producer told me that you could actually fingerprint people off of videos. Is that true, Jeff?
It's going to be hard to edit because I did that third paragraph so many times.
It's okay.
You sure? Do you want me to do the whole thing once more?
It's fine, Heidi.
Sure? You sure? Mm-hmm. Jeff?
With Michael Ratner,
Hi,
and
Flint.
Heidi Bogosian, Dahlia
hey.
Hashad.
Hello.
And
hello.
We're all real proud of you. When we read that the bad guys in Chicago called you a legal huckster, we thought that guy's doing something good.
I said, they must know the same Flint Taylor
yeah.
I know. Congratulations, Flint. We've been following it for a few years, and it's really a big deal.
Okay, go. So what do I want to do coming out of what? Out of the...
Where's your...
No, it's gone. Here's your sheet.
Yes. So it was coming out of...
We didn't do the MCA in the court. Oh, yeah, we did. I finished with the... They rolled back in the courts.
Yeah.
Okay. And the courthouse. Okay.
Growing up
as a Okay. Kid. Okay. So you're going to do the... When are you playing the segment? I should say something about, right?
Yeah.
In this next segment of Law and Disorder, we want to bring you some of the under... Okay. Michael was yawning, Kadaya. You didn't see that. In this next segment of Law and Disorder, we want to bring you some of the underpinnings.
Nice to be here.
Nice to be here.
Nice to be
here. Oh! Oh, Dahlia, you just don't know what you're missing in the studio today.
Sad. It's not the same.
No.
Next time you got to be up here, Dahlia.
Okay.
Well, have another pretzel, Michael.
November 17.
Get them out of here.
Jesus.
Yeah,
I'm
sick of these pretzels.
I'm trying to be on a diet. I can't even zip up my pants. Here, Jeff,
well, are you really
Jeff,
having
you
trouble
call,
zipping up
call
your pants?
And
zipping up my pants?
Oh, please.
Karen
Michael
always
Smith,
zips up my pants.
Are you really
pants.
Having
oh,
trouble
Lord.
Zipping your pants?
So
either I lose weight or I go to the tailor. I got 17 suits that don't fit me.
Michael's wearing a stunning suit today, Dahlia, and Michael Ratner has on a fabulous Italian tailored jacket.
Really?
German.
Mm-hmm. Oh, German, sorry.
Boss? Yeah. Who makes boss?
German.
Hugo Boss?
Hugo German. Boss is Nazi?
Chinese.
Sure.
Wow.
It was made in North
Where's
Vietnam.
It made?
I don't know. It's a good question.
It should be Italy.
Yeah, I'm trying
What's
to get
Zoom's
back
phone
in
number?
Shape.
Made
too.
In Croatia.
Croatia!
Outro for Scott?
Hey, Scott, thanks.
Hey, Scott, you any relating to Horton Hatches the Egg?
I'll do one.
Okay.
An outro, okay. Right?
Heidi, outro.
That was Scott Horton.
Wait.
Should we let them in?
Yeah, yeah, let them in. That's where they went. I was like, what?
You guys want to just observe this interview, maybe, and learn something?
No, he was in the middle of, come on.
Is he arrested?
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, we're trying to rush him, we're trying to rush Jonathan so that we can do Mark.
Hi, Michael Smith.
This is Heidi Bogosian.
Oh, hi.
Everybody knows Jonathan?
Jonathan represents.
They gotta come in.
Jonathan's with the Brennan Center.
You're good, Jonathan.
I'm good. All right. Here. So let me.
Can Heidi and Michael come in?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Heidi or Michael sit on either side of Dahlia.
I'll go out to lunch.
The train never came, and I got stuck in court before that.
Are you kidding?
No.
I hope I don't get stuck in New York.
The four and the five aren't working.
Oh, there's a chair for you.
There is.
Here. Heidi, do you want to come sit here?
How are you doing? Good to meet you. Okay.
Nice to see you.
Sit on the other side.
She has two roles, basically. She's the executive director of the National Lawyers Guild, and then she's Armenian origin.
What was the second one?
Armenian origin.
Oh, okay.
Token Armenian.
She's one of the few people to survive the
chief of getting it straight on the genocide.
She gets teased about that genocide a lot.
Hey, on mic with the...
She's actually having help.
Okay,
chew and swallow.
Let's hit it.
You can't do the food thing.
Okay. Let's not make a big Megillah out of Padilla.
Okay. Go ahead, Heidi.
Welcome to Law and Disorder.
Wait.
Did you get the Yiddish book?
Hold on a second. Quiet on the set.
Welcome to Law and... Hey.
Hey.
Okay. I'm going to send this to Ratner.
Okay. I wish I got the ribbit one, though. Okay, hold on.
That was gross.
You're wrong about the milk. I read an article that said it's a myth. I'm ready, Jeff.
We just say one word. Just say plastic.
We should say.
This was about the center's attorneys being wiretapped.
Yeah.
Wiretapped.
Electronic.
Watergate.
A little closer to the mic, Michael.
Yeah, no, I'm trying to think of how to pitch this.
Pitch it as I would say a low slider is the good idea.
You know the Yogi Berra joke, right? After the game, this is a real one. It's a true story. I heard it on Pardon My Blooper, those records.
Yeah.
After the game, the newscaster comes up to Berra, and he says, "Boy, that was a great game you played. I see you got four singles." And Berra says, "What do you mean? I got five singles or five hits." And the newscaster says, "It must have been a typographical error." And Berra says, "Hell no, it was a clean single to left." Berra was not smart.
That's very funny. That's very
funny. That's a true story. I mean, it's the actual radio. Those Pardon My Bloopers were great. You ever listen to the record?
I loved those.
They took the best stuff off the air in the 50s.
Yeah. And they put them on.
They put them on a record. Yeah, they are funny.
Yeah, I remember the best one. That was the Groucho Marx one.
Put the cigar in. Doesn't he ever take his cigar out?
And he says, "I like smoking cigars too, but once in a while I take it out of my mouth."
Right.
They cut them off the air. Yeah. The screen went black. Remember that?
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah.
They were so funny. Remember there was a horse named Harass, Harass. And it got scratched from the race, and they had to go, and you hear the announcer going, "Don't forget to scratch her ass."
That's funny.
They were great.
Michael, we've just started summer officially. It's now July, and I don't know about you, but I'm longing to get to the beach and have a little sort of relief. With that in mind, we've found some courtroom jokes / bloopers that we thought might be fun to read on the air.
When court's in session, there's always a stenographer that takes down everything. A lot of this stuff has been printed up. And Heidi got a hold of some of the exchanges between the lawyers and the witnesses. Really stupid lawyer questions, really stupid witness answers. Some of them are really funny. "Heidi, I'll be the lawyer. You be the witness." Lawyer says, "Doctor, before you performed the autopsy, did you check for a pulse?"
"No."
"Did you check for blood pressure?"
"No."
Did you check for breathing?
No.
So then it's possible that the patient was alive when you began the autopsy?
No.
How can you be so sure, doctor?
Because his brain was sitting on my desk in a jar.
But could the patient have still been alive nevertheless?
It's possible that he could have been alive and practicing law somewhere.
They teach you in law school not to ask a question unless you know the answer.
Right.
And the classic, I don't know whether they pointed this one out to you, but in my class, the question was, well, he bit his ear off. And then the next question you're not supposed to ask is, how do you know? So the lawyer says, well, how do you know? And the guy says, because I saw him spit it out.
All right. Okay, Michael.
You got a favorite one?
I have a favorite one. It's short. Trooper, when you stopped the defendant, were your red and blue lights flashing?
Witness, yes.
Did the defendant say anything when she got out of her car?
Yes, sir.
What did she say?
What disco am I at?
I love that.
Did you see my client flee the scene?
No, sir, I did not. But subsequently, I observed someone running several blocks away who matched the description of the offender.
Who provided you with the description?
The officer who responded to the scene.
A fellow officer of yours provided the description of this so-called offender? Do you trust this fellow officer?
Yes, sir, with my life.
With your life? Let me then ask you this, officer. Do you have a room where you change your clothes in preparation for the day's duties?
Yes, sir, we do.
And do you have a locker in that room?
Yes, sir, I do.
And do you have a lock on that locker?
Yes, sir.
Why is it, officer, that if you trust your fellow officers with your life, that you find it necessary to lock your locker in a room you share with these same officers?
You see, sir, we share the building with the court complex, and sometimes lawyers have been known to walk through that room.
Yeah, that's the lesson. You're not supposed to ask a question unless you know the answer.
It's hilarious.
What's your date of birth?
July 15th.
What year?
Every year.
What gear were you in at the moment of the impact?
Gucci sweats and Reeboks.
This, my asthenia gravis, does it affect your memory at all?
Yes.
And in what ways does it affect your memory?
I forget.
You forget? Can you give me an example of something that you've forgotten? What was the first thing your husband said to you when he woke up that morning?
He said, "Where am I, Kathy?"
And why did you get upset from that?
My name is Susan.
How old is your son, the one living with you?
38 or 35, I can't remember which.
How long has he lived with you?
45 years.
Where was the location of the accident?
Approximately milepost 499.
Where is milepost 499?
Probably between milepost 498 and 500.
Did you blow your horn or anything?
After the accident?
Before the accident?
Sure. I played for 10 years. I even went to school for it.
How do you know your daughter has ever been involved in the voodoo?
We both do.
Voodoo?
We do.
You do?
Yes, voodoo.
She has three children, right?
Yes.
How many were boys?
None.
Were there any girls? You say the stairs went down to the basement.
Yes.
And these stairs, did they also go up? Mr. Slattery, you went on a rather elaborate honeymoon, didn't you?
I went to Europe, sir.
And you took your new wife? How was your first marriage terminated?
By death.
And by whose death was it terminated? Is your appearance here this morning pursuant to a deposition notice which I sent to your attorney?
No, this is how I dress when I go to work.
Doctor, how many autopsies have you performed on dead people?
All my autopsies are performed on dead people.
Do you recall the time that you examined the body?
The autopsy started around 8:30 p.m.
And Mr. Dennington was dead at that time?
No, he was sitting on the table wondering why I was doing an autopsy. In a trial in the heart of the South, a prosecuting attorney called the first witness, a grandmotherly woman he'd known since childhood, to the stand.
He approached her and he asked, "Mrs. Whitaker, do you know me?"
"Why, yes, I do know you, Mr. Coolidge. I've known you since you were a young boy, and frankly, you've been a big disappointment to me. You lie, cheat, you manipulate people and talk about them behind their backs. You think you're a big shot when you haven't had the brains to realize you never will amount to anything more than a two-bit lawyer. Yes, I know you, Mr. Coolidge."
The lawyer was stunned. Not knowing what else to do, he pointed across the room and asked, "Mrs. Whitaker, do you know the defense attorney?"
"Of course I do. I've known Mr. Johnson since he was a youngster, too. He's lazy, bigoted, and he has a drinking problem. He can't build a normal relationship with anyone, and his law practice is one of the worst in the entire state. Yes, I know Mr. Johnson."
The defense attorney turned red with embarrassment.
The judge, upon hearing the questions and answers thus far, asked both counselors to approach the bench. In a very quiet voice, he said, "If either of you asks her if she knows me, I'll throw you in jail for contempt." That's a good one.
"Can you tell us what was stolen from your house?"
"There was a rifle that belonged to my father that was stolen from the hall closet."
"Can you identify the rifle?"
"Yes. There was something written on the side of it."
"What did the writing say?"
"Winchester."
"Can you describe what the person who attacked you looked like?"
"No, he was wearing a mask."
"What was he wearing underneath the mask?"
"His face."
"Sir, what is your IQ?"
"Well, I can see pretty well, I think."
"How far apart were the vehicles at the time of the collision?" It's really stupid.
<That's>
"All right, lawyer, and you check your radar unit frequently?"
"Officer, yes, I do."
"And was your radar unit functioning correctly at the time you had the plaintiff on radar?"
"Yes, it was malfunctioning correctly." "Lawyer, what happened then?"
"He told me, he says, I have to kill you because you can identify me."
"Did he kill you?"
"No." "Lawyer, now, sir, I'm sure you are an intelligent and honest man."
"Thank you. If I weren't under oath, I'd return the compliment." "Lawyer, do you know how far pregnant you are now?"
"I'll be 3 months on November 8th.
"Apparently, then, the date of conception was August 8th?
"Yes."
"What were you doing at the time?"
"How many times have you committed suicide?"
"4 times." "She had 3 children, right?"
"Yes."
"How many were boys?"
"None."
"Were there girls?" "Lawyer, doctor, did you say he was shot in the woods?"
"No, I said he was shot in the lumbar region."
"Lawyer, what is your marital status?"
"Fair." "Lawyer, are you married?"
"No, I'm divorced."
"And what did your husband do before you divorced him?"
"A lot of things I didn't know about."
"Lawyer, and who is this person you are speaking of?"
"My ex-widow said it." "Lawyer, did he pick the dog up by the ears?"
"No."
"What was he doing with the dog's ears?"
"Picking them up in the air."
"Where was the dog at this time?"
"Attached to the ears." "And lastly, Gary, all your responses must be oral, okay? What school did you go to?"
"Oral."
"How old are you?"
"Oral."
"What is your relationship with the plaintiff?"
"She is my daughter."
"Was she your daughter on February 13th, 1979?
"Lawyer, now you've investigated other murders, have you not, where there was a victim?" "Lawyer, and what did he do then?"
"He came home and the next morning he was dead."
"So when he woke up the next morning, he was dead."
"Did you tell your lawyer that your husband had offered you indignities?"
"Didn't offer me nothing. He just said I could have the furniture."
"So after the anesthesia, when you came out of it, what did you observe with respect to your scalp?"
"I didn't see my scalp the whole time I was in the hospital."
It was covered?
Yes, bandaged.
Then later on, what did you see?
I had a skin graft. My whole buttocks and leg were removed and put on top of my head.
Could you see him from where you were standing?
I could see his head.
And where was his head?
Just above his shoulders.
Do you drink when you're on duty?
I don't drink when I'm on duty, unless I come on duty drunk.
Any suggestions as to what prevented this from being a murder trial instead of an attempted murder trial?
The victim lived.
The truth of the matter is that you were not an unbiased, objective witness, isn't it? You too were shot in the fracas.
No, sir. I was shot midway between the fracas and the navel. Officer, what led you to believe the defendant was under the influence?
Because he was argumentary and he couldn't pronunciate his words.
Someone told me a joke, Michael, that I'd love to share with you. It may not be politically correct, but here goes. It's a dumb blonde joke.
Let's hear it.
Dumb blonde walks into a library, goes up to the counter, and says to the librarian, "I'll have a Big Mac, no mayo, a large Coke, and an order of fries." The librarian looks at her and says, "This is a library, not McDonald's." Dumb blonde goes, "I'll have a Big Mac, no mayonnaise, large fries, and a Coke."
That's a really funny joke.
I know.
Generally speaking, I don't like lawyer jokes because you and me and our friends were all the kind of lawyers that didn't do any harm. You know, we were what we call in our show lawyers you'll like. You know, we tried to help people out, which is not true of most lawyers. You know, when you go to law school is all about whacking up private property, if you think about it. You know, property, contracts, torts, trusts and estates. It's all about, and lawyers by and large represent the people who own the property against the people who got the short end of the stick. You can understand the animus of lawyer jokes because lawyers are not particularly popular. The recent Pew poll showed that lawyers as a group of professionals were the second most unpopular group in America.
Who was the first group?
Politicians, and most of them are lawyers.
Yes.
So with that qualification, I want to tell you my favorite lawyer joke. Rich New York businessman, he's got some horrible disease, he's trying to get some help, goes to Presbyterian Hospital, no luck, goes to NYU, no luck. Flies out to Stanford, California, to the clinic out there, that famous clinic, and they can't help him. So he winds up in Minneapolis, Minnesota, at the famous Mayo Clinic. And he comes in, and the administrator of the hospital knows who he is in advance and greets him at the door and says, "Sir, you know, we'd like to give you a tour of our grounds and show you the kind of resources we have here, and we hope we can help you." So the first place he takes him is into the research laboratory. They walk in the door. It's this huge room, and over on the left wall are all these cages full of lawyers. So the businessman says, "How come those cages are all full of lawyers instead of rats?" And the hospital administrator replies, "Well, three reasons, really. First of all, there are more of them. And secondly, we find that our research associates get less attached to them. And third, there are just some things that rats won't do."
Visit us online at lawanddisorder.org for archived programs and links to many of the issues we discuss.
Michael, I know you've thought a lot about this. If you were asked, what would you say as to why lawyers are so detested?
Well, because they represent the rich against the poor. But lawyers in our system are a relatively, historically speaking, new phenomena. You didn't have lawyers 1,000 years ago. You had a feudal society where you had these big landed estates and you had these almost slave-like serfs working on them. There was no mobility. There was no trade except for luxury goods. You couldn't buy or sell property. You couldn't borrow money. There was no commerce, really. Things were static. And that, over the course of about 800 years, changed into have what we now have as modern capitalism, where labor is a commodity, where there's a lot of insecurity. And in the old medieval times, now I'm not a Pollyanna, I know that it was not the greatest situation, but there was a certain noblesse oblige on the part of the upper classes, a certain duty they had to take care of their serfs. And that was all lost when the laws of the market were introduced and when labor became a commodity and when lawyers came on the scene to represent the rich people against the poor people. And that's why you have that line in Shakespeare, first thing we do, kill all the lawyers.
Right.
Or why Thomas More left lawyers out of his utopia. Lawyers and lawyer jokes are, historically speaking, a relatively new phenomena.
Mm. I also suppose the fact that lawyers often rely on technicalities to prevail in certain cases is considered unseemly by a lot of people.
Yeah, yeah. Especially when you lose a case on a technicality.
Well, Michael, one lawyer that I have a particular fondness of, in part because he was Armenian, is Charles Garry. G-A-R-R-Y. And in this wonderful compendium that our mutual friend and colleague Anne Fagan Ginger put together, it's called The Relevant Lawyers, Conversations Out of Court on Their Clients, Their Practice, Their Politics, Their Lifestyle. She has a chapter dedicated to Charles Garry, and I thought we might read parts of it for this show to give a sense of a real political lawyer, because he had some really interesting cases.
Yeah, he was a great lawyer out in San Francisco. He was Bobby Seale's lawyer during the famous Chicago 7 trial. And remember, he had surgery, and he couldn't show up to the trial for a couple of weeks, and the judge wouldn't postpone the trial. And Bobby Seale said, well, if you won't postpone the trial, I want to represent myself. And the judge wouldn't let him do it. And the windup was, the judge had Bobby Seale bound and gagged in the courtroom. And it was one of the most shameful, according to Bill Kunstler, who was one of the lawyers for the Chicago 7, along with Len Wineglass, one of the most shameful spectacles in American history, having this black man bound and gagged in front of a bench in federal court in Chicago.
Well, you're actually starting to get into some of the essence.
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Take over.
I thought that I would read the role of interviewer Anne Fagan Ginger, and you could be Garry. So
okay.
We're going to read from the chapter. It's called Political Lawyers and Their Clients. Charles Garry. Charles Garry is a lawyer with over 30 years of experience in handling trial work, both civil and criminal. Before he became known nationally for representing Huey Newton, Bobby Seale, and Los Siete de la Raza, he represented union members during the strikes in the 30s and 40s, victims of McCarthyism in the 50s, and poor black people throughout his career. He has also done personal injury, domestic relations, and non-political criminal trial work. He is a past president of the National Lawyers Guild San Francisco chapter and a partner in the firm of Garry, Dreyfus, McTernan, and Brodsky. Charles, how do you gather evidence and prepare for the defense of a political client? Maybe you can give us some specific examples from the first Huey Newton trial.
The first thing you do when you have a client in a serious case, or even a minor case, is to get to know something about him. It's fundamental. If you don't know your client, you're not going to be able to represent him. You've got to know what makes that client tick. and what makes him be like he is, what direction it comes from, what direction he's going in. If you don't, then you're failing in your basic responsibility as a trial counsel, your responsibility to marshal the facts. You have to evaluate the kind of person you're dealing with. If you have a responsive relationship with your client, you'll be able to project that feeling of confidence and security to others. You've got to know your client's family, schooling, religious background, if he has any. And if he's an atheist, you've got to know that. And you've got to know why. You've got to know your client's political views, his thoughts toward life itself. Of course, you've got to get to know his marital status and, if he's not married, whether he's got a girlfriend. If your client happens to be a homosexual, you should know that. And you should know the extent of the relationship. The sooner you find these things out, the better. In the Huey Newton case, the alleged incident took place on October 28, 1967, and he was charged with murdering one policeman, assaulting another, and kidnapping someone else. I was contacted on November 1st, and I saw Huey on the same day. I felt right away that this man was totally and completely innocent. Huey was the kind of person I immediately felt a warmth and friendship with. His charisma and his openness and frankness just came right through, even while he was lying in a hospital bed with a tube through his nose. He was in obvious pain from being shot, and the police were all around.
Even while you were talking to him?
Yes, the police were all over the place. They had been kicking his hospital bed and calling him a god-dirty son of a
bitch. Wait.
Saying they're going to cut off that tube in your nose so that you'll choke to death, so that the state won't have to bother trying or gassing you, and things of that kind, right while he was in the hospital. I immediately suggested that we get a 24-hour nursing service that we would pay for ourselves so that there would be protection for him, and that was done. The first thing I told Huey was to keep his mouth shut. I tell this to every single client. Don't talk to anybody, especially if the client is in jail. What the authorities do is to put an agent or an informer or just another prisoner in with them, and they tell that prisoner, now, you get some information out of this bloke here, and in exchange, we'll see that you're properly taken care of. For instance, in the case of Los Siete de la Raza, the Chicanos charged with the murder of one police officer and assault on another, they had four different people in the cell with the defendants. One of the four was a murderer who testified for the prosecution that one of the Los Siete had made certain statements to him. The result of that, this prisoner got a year in the county jail on a first-degree murder charge, and he's out of jail now. So you've got to warn your client. Make him aware that he has no friends he can talk to. Let's assume his cellmate's a good guy. He tells this guy a lot of things. Well, the guy's not a stool pigeon. He's not going to tell anybody. But they can force him to give that information because there's no confidential relationship between him and your client, as there is between you and your client. Unless there is an attorney-client relationship or a clergyman-parishioner relationship, a person who refuses to testify can be held in contempt of court. Just let him say, my attorney has admonished me not to discuss this case at all with anyone. Don't let him discuss it with friends or relatives, even his parents, because if he's told the story to one person, that one person always has another confidential friend that he can tell it to, in absolute assurance that it will not be relayed, and it becomes a chain reaction. He might as well put it on TV and get it over with. Huey Newton's family is a very close-knit one. Huey, being the baby, they just idolized him. Not because he was the baby, but because he was a very humane, selfless person, and very considerate of other people's feelings. I saw this immediately, and I began to study his background and what the Black Panther Party was about. This was all part of gathering the evidence. I had never heard of the Black Panther Party or Huey Newton before this. I had been busy trying other kinds of cases. When I'm working on a personal injury case or a straight murder case, that's what I concentrate on. So I had to find out what made the Black Panther Party and what made Huey Newton the type of person he was. Ordinarily, when you've got a case, you try to evaluate what the law is in relation to your client's problem. I did not have to do that. I knew what the law was from past experience. What I had to find out was what made my client have the outlook he had. After all, under the Sixth Amendment of the United States Constitution, the client is entitled to assistance of counsel. The lawyer is only an assistant to the person who is defending himself. You can't be a good assistant unless you know who the principal is, what his weaknesses are, and what his strengths are.
What if he doesn't tell you the truth, or you don't think he's telling you the truth?
Well, Anne, telling the truth is irrelevant at this point because you're finding out about his life, not about what happened in the case. You don't have to get into the facts of the case with him until such time as you get to know him. In Huey's case, my investigation of the facts was studying black history, the Black Panther Party, and Huey Newton.
What if he had come to a straight criminal lawyer who had no political background? Do you think the lawyer could have defended Newton without doing that?
No. He couldn't have. You see, there was a whole body of materials in existence that had a bearing on the case. For instance, there was an essay by Huey Newton in the Black Panther paper of July 17, 1967, in which he had made some very inflammatory statements. If someone read that without understanding its political context or the language of the ghetto, without understanding black history, he might find enough in there to show intent to commit first-degree murder by Huey Newton. If we hadn't understood the political concepts and complexities in Huey Newton's case, I believe he would have been convicted of murder.
In other words, you cannot have a successful non-political defense for a political defendant.
It's impossible, just impossible.
And I think it also takes a long history of handling political and labor cases and being friends with other lawyers who have handled them to know how to proceed in a major political trial like this one. A student asks, can you expand a little bit about the lawyer as an assistant to the defendant in his defense? How do you allow the defendant to express his political stance in the courtroom?
Well, let's take the Newton case as a classic example. His position was well known. He had written articles. He had spoken about his party's 10-point program. Since the Black Panther Party was formed to fill a need in the black community, in giving his views, Huey was also giving the cry of the community. The black community itself was on trial. So before the trial even started, when I was questioning the prospective jurors in voir dire examination to decide which ones I wanted to strike from the jury, I went into my client's political views, his opposition to the war in Vietnam, his correlation of the war in Vietnam and the bombing of Hiroshima and the Korean War and all the other things that were going on as genocide against people of color. This voir dire examination is a subject of a book. In my opening statement to the jury, I gave the 10-point program of the Black Panther Party. I told them that Huey Newton was a militant who believed that revolutionary change was necessary. I explained that revolutionary change meant abrupt change. When Huey took the stand, he spent 2 days talking about his philosophy and the Black Panther Party's political outlook. Because you can't duck it. It's there. There's no way of hiding it. What you have to do is project it. Let me give you an example of the consequences when you try to hide it. Around March 1970, a Black Panther was tried in Los Angeles for alleged murder. The whole case, from picking the jury to the verdict, was done in 4 days. That includes sentencing the defendant to death. The lawyer who defended him had said, "Let's not talk about the fact that you're a member of the Black Panther Party. Let's not arouse that form of bias and prejudgment in the jury." Well, you can't duck it. You've got to tell the jury, "This is exactly what my client believes. Do you have any prejudgments about it?" Don't let the prosecution sneak it in by innuendo, by saying, "Now, we're not trying the Black Panther Party here, ladies and gentlemen of the jury. We're not trying the revolution. We're trying this man because he did something wrong. He killed a human being." Don't let him get you in that box. Make it very clear that this man is being tried because of his beliefs.
Due to time limitations, we're going to skip to the end of the interview between Anne Fagan-Ginger and Charles Gary. Anne Fagan-Ginger asks, "Do you enjoy what you're doing?"
"Of course I do."
And then a student asks him, "Do you think there will be more repression against attorneys like yourself who represent political clients to stifle what you do by using contempt citations?"
Yes, they'll try to do that. But you see, that's why it's important to have the lawyers also work with the guys on the street, a bilateral relationship, so that our forces will grow. If they can isolate us and keep us small, of course, they're going to stifle us. But I expect us to get stronger, not to be static or get defeated. We're growing. We're a lot stronger today than we were a year ago. We're certainly a lot stronger today than we were 2 years ago. You see, the struggle makes us strong. The struggle and the oppression teach people. The young people who went south in 1964 were committed to peaceful picketing and vocal dissent. They learned by practice and experience. Now, some of them are criticizing the young people today who are not yet committed to anything beyond vocal dissent. As Huey said recently, they better take a page from their own lesson and not be so critical of people who are just joining the struggle.
We've been reading from Anne Fagan Ginger's book, The Relevant Lawyers, Conversations Out of Court on Their Clients, Their Practice, Their Politics, and Their Lifestyle. Law and Disorder has been broadcasting for nearly 13 years now. We started on WBAI in New York City and are now carried on nearly 100 affiliate stations across the country. We'd like to take a moment to thank them.
WBAI 99.5 FM, New York City. KRFP 90.3 FM, Radio Free Moscow, Moscow, Idaho. WRFN 107.5 FM, Nashville, Tennessee. KSOW 106.7 FM, Cottage Grove, Oregon. WYAP 101.7 FM, Clay, West Virginia.
KRFC 88.9 FM, Fort Collins, Colorado. WRCT 88.3 FM, Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. KWMD 90.7 FM, Kasilof, 104.5 FM radio, Anchorage, Alaska. WXOJLP, 103.3 FM, Northampton, Massachusetts.
KEIF-FM, 104.7 FM, Enid, Oklahoma. WPVM, 103.9 FM, Asheville, North Carolina. ISPCA Radio, Indiana, online to Chicago. Motion Community House Radio, online.
WLRI 92.9 FM, Gap, Pennsylvania. WPRR 1680 AM, Grand Rapids, Michigan. WCRS 102.1 FM, Columbus Community Radio. 98.3 FM, Central Ohio. KKFI 90.1 FM, Kansas City, Missouri.
Free Radio Santa Cruz, WSLR-FM 96.5, Sarasota, Florida, KDX Internet Radio, KDX World Around Radio, Lorain Community College Radio, WHUS 91.7 FM, Storrs, Connecticut,
WJFF Radio Catskill 90.5 FM, WDRT 91.9 FM, Viroqua, Wisconsin.
That's where I used to go fishing with Michael Ratner.
WERU 89.9 FM, Blue Hill, Maine, 99.9 FM, Bangor, Maine, Redwood Community Radio.
KMUD 91.1 FM, Garberville, California. KMUE 88.3 FM, Eureka, California. KLAI 90.3 FM, Laytonville, California. Voice of Sacramento 88.7 FM, Sacramento Community Radio.
WWPM MediaNet, Nokomis, Illinois. Community Radio for Cape Cod, WOMR 92.1, Provincetown, Mass., where I grew up. WMHC 91.5 FM, Mount Holyoke College, South Hadley, Mass., where I did three semesters.
When you dropped out.
KSER FM 90.7 FM, Everett, Washington.
WHUS 91.7 FM, University of Connecticut. Free Radio Olympia, Olympia, Washington. WCRS, LPFM, 98.3 FM and 102.1 FM, Columbus, Ohio. KSKQ, 94.9 FM, Homegrown Radio, Ashland, Oregon. WAZU, 90.7 FM.
WGCX, 90.7 FM, Community Radio Green and Columbia Counties, New York. WGCX, 90.7 FM, Community Radio Green and Columbia Counties, New York. KSVR, 91.7 FM, Skagit Valley Community Radio. KYRS, 92.3 FM and 89.9 FM, Thin Air Community Radio, Spokane, Washington.
WQVR, The Eye, 1640 AM, Sandersdale, Southbridge, Massachusetts. WFTE, 90.3 FM and 105.7 FM, Scranton and Mount Cobb, Pennsylvania. Rochester Free Radio, WRFI 91.9 FM, Watkins Glen. WINO 89.9 FM, Odessa, and 88.1 FM, Ithaca, New York. WEFT 90.1 FM, Champaign, Illinois.
Radio Phoenix, online community radio, Phoenix, Arizona. Boston Free Radio, Geneva Community Radio, your voice for many voices in the Finger Lakes. KAOS 89.3 FM, Olympia, Washington. KWTF, Sonoma County, California.
Radio Free Kansas, Northeast Kansas. KBOO 90.7 FM, Community Radio, Portland. 100.7 FM, Corvallis. 91.9 FM, Hood River. WSCA 106.1 FM, Portsmouth, New Hampshire. WZRD 88.3 FM, Chicago, Illinois.
KOWA 106.5 FM, Olympia, Washington. WRIR 97.3, Richmond, Virginia. KMEC 105.1 FM, Ukiah, California. KSVU 90.1 FM, Concrete, Washington. WXPI 88.5 FM, Williamsport, Pennsylvania.
KNSJ 89.1 FM, San Diego, California. KGHI 91.1 FM, Westport, Washington. Our Streaming Planet podcast. WPFW 89.3 FM, Washington, D.C. KPFT 90.1 FM, Houston, Texas. 89.7 FM, Huntsville, Texas. 89.5 FM, Galveston, Texas. WOOL FM 91.5 FM, Bellow Falls, Vermont. Black Sheep Radio.
KGIG 104.9 FM, Salida, California. KEUL 88.9 FM, Girdwood, Alaska. KRDILP 103.1 FM, Duval, Washington. WUMD 89.3 FM, University of Massachusetts, Dartmouth. KWRKLP 90.9 FM, Alaska Peace Center, Fairbanks, Alaska.
WGRNLP 94.1 FM, Columbus, Ohio. WOOC 105.3 FM, Troy, New York. WHYRLP 96.9 FM, Baton Rouge Community Radio, Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And Workforce Rising Online.
Thanks to all our affiliates. If you're not on this list and would like to be, please contact lawanddisorder.org, our producer Jeff Brady, so we can count you among our growing list of stations, and we'll notify you of upcoming programs and specials. Thank you.